Hello, and welcome to the first Clinical Oncology Podcast Extra. In this episode, we will be talking to Dr. Katie Clark, who is a clinical oncologist and training program director in Leeds. Dr. Clark has recently been awarded the Royal College of Radiologists Oncology Registrar's Forum Trainer Award for 2019, which recognises excellence in the teaching and training of clinical oncology trainees in the UK. Hello, this is Finn Slevin and Anthony Zenu. We're clinical oncology trainees in West Yorkshire, and today we've got the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Katie Clark, who's been awarded the Oncology Registrar's Forum Trainer of the Year Award for 2019. So congratulations, Dr. Clark.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be the ORF Trainer of the Year?
Feels amazing. I'm really lucky to have been trained by some amazing trainers myself. And now some of those trainers are my colleagues. We've also got lots of new and enthusiastic colleagues who always say yes when I ask for volunteers to support our trainees. And the trainees themselves make my job really worthwhile. They're all committed, really keen to be involved, and really invested in their own training and the future of the department. And I think nationally, we're lucky in clinical oncology training because nationally we have a really high standard. And I love the fact that this award recognises all the good things that are going on in each department across the country.
Your enthusiasm for this shines through. What made you first apply for the role of training programme director in West Yorkshire?
Well, I was inspired by the excellent training I had, as I mentioned before, and I really wanted to provide that for the next generation of trainees coming through. I've seen over the last 10 years a change in the pressures on doctors in training, and it's really important to ensure high quality training despite all of these pressures, and I felt I might be able to make a difference with that. As well as that, from my point of view, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing somebody develop and succeed during the training and know that I've contributed and helped with that.
So it's really clear, Katie, you're really passionate about working with trainees, but what are some of the challenges in doing so?
I think the biggest challenge I found when I took over as TPD was a learning curve for me in understanding the systems, coordinating the many different parties involved in the lives of the trainees and the scheme as a whole, and just trying to balance this all out for the trainees. On one hand, you have the service provision for the trust, then you've got the deanery, then you've got the RCR, and each trainee has their own individual needs, both personally and professionally. So it's really important to communicate between all of these parties on behalf of the trainee and encourage the trainee to talk to you and any other colleagues as well.
Thank you, Katie. Your work and effort is really inspiring. Reading some of the comments from the Clinical Oncology Registrars in Leeds, it's apparent that they feel you have created a very supportive training environment. And that includes trainees who work less than full-time, academic trainees, those with health problems. How have you achieved this?
So communication is obviously key here, and encouraging trainees to plan ahead so we can accommodate any future aspirations. We're quite lucky in Leeds to work in quite a compact department and training scheme, and we rotate just between Hull and Leeds, which means I'm able to meet all the trainees informally on a regular basis. It also really, really helps that we have an in-house FRCR Part 1 course. So when the trainees are placed in Hull, they're actually over in the department once a week to come to that training course. So during that afternoon, they can pop in, raise any concerns with me as well. We also have excellent educational supervisors in both Hull and Leeds, and they're really good at letting me know if they have any concerns about a trainee or if a trainee's discussed some career plans. And this allows us as a team to support the trainees. The other thing that's very important is creating a robust workforce, and this requires flexibility in the workforce, and it allows trainees to come in and out of programme as needed, or we can support trainees in a range of ways to train. I believe the more we encourage trainees to develop a wide range of skills and different working practices, the better our cancer centres become and our cancer services.
That's very forward thinking, I think. Trainees in Leeds have also credited you with helping enormously with regards to the FRCR examinations. You've touched on that a little bit. What have you done to help trainees in Leeds?
I think the most important thing there is it getting the investment of all the trainers in the department, and secondly using a range of methods to support exam preparation and knowledge development for their long-term careers. In terms of the Part 1 course, I think in-house weekly teaching is absolutely invaluable, and I know it's not available countrywide. Because of our in-house teaching, our teachers work in the department, many of them sit on the RCR exam committees, and because of this personal investment they have in supporting the trainees and additional understanding of the exam needs, they're able to provide extra support, particularly leading up to the exams themselves. They really do go above and beyond their call of duty. They arrange extra sessions, try to write exam questions for the trainees. In terms of the Part 2 exams, we try to set our teaching sessions in exam format to allow development of technique as well as knowledge. This means parts of our tutorials are in SBA format, part are in Viva format, part are in clinical format, so the trainees learn early what's expected of them in the exam. And so when they sit down to revise, they've got almost a structure that they're aiming for when going into revision. Also, going into the clinical and Viva exam, as we all know, is very, very intimidating. And I believe that realistic, intensive mock exams before this is very important. This means that I recruit nearly every trainer in the department to be involved in one mock exam or another. But this helps the whole department to appreciate what the trainees are going through. It helps them keep up to date on the exam and the exam technique. And this transfers new skills then into day-to-day teaching because they teach more in an exam format way.
In terms of more generally, what advice would you offer trainees who are preparing for the exams?
So I have four top tips for my trainees that I normally recommend. So I really advocate starting practicing technique as early as possible, even before you've really sat down to involve yourself in the textbooks and revision. So I advise that they put themselves in for the mock clinical and Viva exam in the sitting before they're actually going to sit it, and reassure them that we've all been there and we've all given silly answers in the past. So don't worry if you say something that's wrong. It's the technique you need. Secondly, I really encourage people to work with their colleagues and other people who are going through the same experience. Set up revision sessions, allocate a particular subject that one of you will present and teach the rest of the group on, which helps you get a deeper understanding for the subject. And also, they may have noticed things or understood something differently that can help you in that final exam. Also, having close colleagues during that very stressful time helps you put things into perspective when you're having a last minute panic. Thirdly, attend as many MDTs and clinics as possible in as many different cancer sites as you can. It's a great way to see all the different types of cases you might see in the exams. Often tricky questions come up unexpectedly in those clinics, and you can ask that consultant in the MDT or clinic, you've got them captive, those particularly tricky questions you've not really understood. And fourthly, it's just practice, practice, practice. Go to every mock, take advantage of every teaching session, go on courses, and you know, the trainers won't mind you bothering them because they get a great deal of satisfaction from helping you pass.
Thank you, Katie. It has been well reported that there are service pressures in oncology, that's partly associated with trainee gaps throughout the country. How have you tried to manage this in Leeds?
So obviously in clinical oncology, because we really encourage personal and professional development in a range of ways, during training, it does mean gaps arise. There is a strong culture, however, that despite these pressures of escalating workload, it's essential to protect our training time. And this means we've had to look to other options to support the workforce and protect our specialty training. Also, having other workforce options means that we can encourage out-of-programme experience in a range of ways and allow our specialty to actually evolve and develop. I really think it's important to understand where the pressures come from and see the bigger picture in order to see how we can solve them. One of the ways we solve this in Leeds is to undertake the MTI programme with Tata Memorial Hospital in Kolkata. We actually travel to teach the Part 2A course over there annually, and we go over and actually meet potential trainees in person who want to come and work in Leeds. We interview them whilst they're there and assess them during the course, and this gives us an opportunity to get a very personal view of the potential candidates. Having the trainees come from the same hospital each time means we have a safe and robust system as well. As with many other schemes, we've also diversified the workforce. So our department's introduced AMPs, PAs, radiographer consultants. I know in some areas there are concerns that these new roles might interfere with training opportunities, but I like to think that it simply extends how many trainers we have from our trainees, because trainers don't have to be doctors, they can be a range of other specialists. The final thing we need to recognise is that as the treatments become more complex, the service busier, we need to be proactive about expanding our consultant workforce as a solution as well. We can't always rely on our trainees. And this means you need to be writing business cases, talking to our managers. Of course, this highlights how important it is for us to expand our training numbers to achieve this. And we can't lose sight that we do need to balance some training with service, because that's where you learn your skills of service management and making independent decisions, which are just as important. So it's getting that balance right.
So following on from that then, Katie, how do you think we should best support trainees with regards to the pressures of service provision and that need for teaching and training?
So I think listening is key here, and I encourage regular meetings with the trainees and myself so we can have a discussion about any issues that have risen amongst the training scheme. I also encourage one-to-one discussions, and my door is always open. It allows people to air the frustrations at a particular situation, but often I find the trainees come up with their own solution rather than me. I also talk to clinical and educational supervisors regularly, who again can often offer a solution rather than just a problem. When the trainers and trainees see the positive results of their suggestions, it really lifts the morale of the department, and it encourages people to continue investing in training and continue to communicate and continue to come up with new suggestions.
Thanks very much, Katie. We wanted to ask a little bit about your own career now. So you trained in Leeds and then you took up a consultant post here too. So what are your views about working as a consultant in the same place as where you've trained?
So I think there's pros and cons to that. And I think in a department, for the progression of the department, there needs to be a balance of recruiting both internal and external candidates for consultant posts. I definitely think we need both. For internal candidates, there's a slightly more seamless transition to a consultant post as they're used to the systems and the colleagues already. But I think encouraging internal candidates to work in other areas, such as doing an out-of-programme experience or a higher degree before taking up their consultant post, allows them to bring new skills into the department. External candidates, on the other hand, can also bring new skills, new ways of working, new ideas to the department. So I think having a balance of both is really important.
And staying on out-of-programme experience, you undertook a clinical fellowship in Toronto at the end of your clinical oncology training. So what did you learn from that?
I think the biggest thing I learned from my year in Toronto was how to transition from being a trainee to a practising consultant. It really deepened my understanding of concepts, but also how to apply them. And it allowed me to develop my own opinions on management. My self-confidence increased about tenfold following that year, and by the time I returned, I was definitely ready to be a consultant.
In many parts of the world, they have a model of a radiation oncologist and a medical oncologist. But as a clinical oncologist, you treat patients using both radiotherapy and systemic therapies. What do you see as the pros and cons of that approach?
Well, having worked as a radiation oncologist in Canada, I feel lucky on a daily basis. I work in the UK and I have the opportunity to be a clinical oncologist. being a clinical oncologist is such a unique position to be in because you're able to provide such holistic care for patients, whatever their pathway, which could be from curative radiotherapy to novel advanced systemic therapy to high quality palliation. The challenge comes with being able to practice both systemic therapy and radiotherapy is with workload and capacity, particularly as I treat lung cancer since implementing immunotherapy. The workload pressures have significantly increased over the last 5 years. The way I've chosen to deal with that is focus on thoracic cancers only, and I've given up on my other cancer sites. And so that allows me to focus completely on thoracic cancer at all areas. And then on, I've got my other educational roles, obviously, which also help my work-life balance.
Thanks, Katie. So looking ahead and into the future, how does clinical oncology training need to evolve, do you think, to meet the demands of treating patients with cancer in the 21st century?
So there is a big concern because obviously cancer is more prevalent, treatments are more complex, patients are living longer. And the current level of service simply cannot cope with this nationally. We need to diversify the workforce, which will help to a certain extent. But as highlighted in the RCR workforce census, we must expand our consultant workforce. And the only way to do this is by expanding our training numbers. It's been difficult for training programme directors across the country to gain additional training numbers in clinical oncology because of funding issues. But I know there's been lots of innovative solutions to this, and we just need to keep trying and communicating with our deaneries.
And finally, now that you have been awarded the ORF Trainer of the Year award, what do you intend to do with regards to clinical oncology training and your role as TPD in West Yorkshire?
So there's a few local training points I'm working on, such as redeveloping the FRCR Part 1 course, because it doesn't include a great deal of radiology teaching at present. And we're also going to introduce some radiology into our Part 2 course as well. And we've recently implemented a practical IGRT training course into the physics part of the FRCR 1 course, and the feedback's been really good. I'm very keen also to expand training numbers in West Yorkshire. My initial business case was not supported, but I continue to work with the deanery to see how we can solve this. Most importantly, however, is I'm looking forward to working on merging the clinical and medical oncology training schemes at ST3 level into the common oncology year. I think joining the Specialty Training Board and Curriculum Committee for me has really helped me understand the broader issues relating to this nationally. And we need to now look at how we're practically going to do this at a local level. Each training scheme across the country is going to have to find their own remedy for this challenge. But I'm engaging with my current trainees and trainers locally to find solutions. And I think we'll be able to merge these schemes and the deadline. I would encourage, finally, to say anybody who's thinking of getting more involved in training the college, just to apply. We all feel we're in very busy jobs and we don't have time to do these roles, but it's so rewarding. And when you've got a busy clinical practice, it really brings quite a balance to your job. And I'd highly recommend